Can you hear us?
Yep.
Tom, for your information, is chairman of our long-range planning committee. He was a board member, but then moved out of the community, so you know he had to relinquish his board seat.
And on that note, can I ask you to please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes of October 13th? Hearing none, they'll stand as printed. Is there anyone in the vast audience, and welcome audience, normally we don't have anyone at all, that would like to address any matter that is not on the agenda? Hi, Joe. Thank you. We have a lot of ground to cover this morning, and with respect to everyone's First Amendment rights and their right to free speech, we're going to move this along and be finished by noon so we get to the town hall meeting by 1 o'clock. And we'll have lunch prepared and brought in by about 11:15, so no one will go up there weak from hunger. Item A is financial reports. The financial report has been in your package, and if you have any questions, this is a time to ask Lee Bateman.
Is there a printed copy of the documents, or were we supposed to bring an electronic device to look at them?
We can get you one, and the answer is yes.
The answer is yes to?
We can get you a printed copy, but yeah, normally you bring your tablet. You'll be forgiven. There'll be no fine exacted this time. Yeah. Are there any questions of the latest financials? They're in your package. The manager's report, are there any questions of the manager's report when it comes to consumption? Water production. That's also in your package. We'll go to item number two, which is lead and copper.
The last meeting, we decided to put some more information on our... Every year we take lead and copper tests. Not every year, every 3 years. The state requires us to take lead and copper tests from homes that were built pre-1985. So we have 20 sites that we go to and have the homeowner takes the test for us. He fills up the bottle. And we were discussing it at the previous meeting, and the suggestion was made to put a little more information on our lead and copper tests out on the website, which we have done. Our tests came back from the 20. They came back, for the most part, we were good. We did have one house that was a little bit high, and I've contacted her, and she will. And she's getting in touch with a plumber. It's basically our water is fine. We don't have lead and copper in it to any degree. It's when the water gets to the house, things can happen in the house that cause the solder that contains lead to leach into the water. So that's why we take these tests. That's why we have the homeowner do it, and the water has to sit for 6 hours before the test is taken. There are a lot more homes than 20 in here that are older, pre-1985. So we have some more information out there for people. If they can get in contact with us to, you know, give them a lab they can go to do their own test. So that's kind of where it's at. I've reported to the state. The state not gotten back to me yet on the results, but we're not in non-compliance, so we're good.
questions or comments from the board? Yes, sir.
Just more a comment, I think. I had a conversation with a neighbor after we had our board meeting, so that I was now sensitized to the lead issue. I had a conversation with them, and at some point in that conversation, I said, how old's your place? And it was, you know, they're the third or fourth owner or something like that, but it would be in within that range.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suggested to them that they do this, which was news to them. And I'm wondering how many other people are out there who don't know they should ask the question. In other words, just because I own a cabin that was built in pre-1985 doesn't mean that I intuitively know that I should be contacting the water company and saying, will you send me out a lead testing kit?
Well, it would probably be that we would give them a lab they could go to, and they would have to take their own test.
But how do they know that?
Well, it's supposed to be disclosed in the sale.
It should be a disclosure. I never bought a house prior to
I'm just suggesting we might be more proactive, and at the very least, in a bubbler or something, put a box that says, you know, attention, you know, old homeowners or something. Owners of old homes. You understand what I'm trying to get at here? Is
so we only get
yeah.
one then, huh?
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, everybody would set up that. Okay, I've said my piece. I'm just saying, I don't think they would have done this had we not had that conversation, or had they not had the conversation with someone else. Okay?
Okay.
And I'm not wandering around my neighborhood knocking on the doors of cabins that look like they're older than 85 or whatever, but anyway.
We can work on that.
That's
someone's done work on it.
Okay.
And we have some sources we'll go to, and we'll do that. And we can put it out, put it on our website very easily.
You know,
if you're curious.
It's already on the website, but we can expand it out to,
you know, what to do if you're curious and who to go to and that sort of thing.
The water district did a study on copper and lead. They had people taking samples first draw, then 30 seconds later, take a sample, and the first draw, some of them exceeded the drinking water limit, but the 30-second sample was fine because it sits inside the pipe, and it's like Dick said, the starter contained the lead. That's it.
Item 3 is the final easement payment on well 4.
Our well 4 is located on a private property, and we have an agreement with the owner of the property to, we have an easement there, access easement, and an easement to operate, to have access to our well and operate the well. After 5 years of drilling the well, we have a second easement payment to make to the owner, which that time has come, and we talked about it last meeting. We issued a check, she came and picked it up, and so that payment is done. I don't know if Michael wants to add anything to that, but
nope.
we chose to continue operating the well, so we had to pay another payment to her, and that's the final one. We have owe her no more. The lease is for 99 years, so I think we'll be operating the well. It's producing real well, and even better than we thought, and so we want to continue to use it, and that's where we are.
How much was that payment?
$125,000.
If you were not on the board a few years ago when Calaveras County Water District decided to summarily cut us off, we went in search of water since we're a well water company. We looked at 18 probable sites in this near area. We tested on upwards of 10 or 12 of them, and the results were grim. The results were more than grim. And the only one of the few places we found water is the one that Dave just mentioned. This was 5 or 6 years ago. And it's been producing, I hate to use the word well, but it is, producing well ever since. This was a lease agreement rather than outright purchase. We did make an outright purchase, another piece of property. We have two standby wells on that piece of property, and we maintain those as needed. It's just the 5 years that we're under this contract seem to go very rapidly. But I don't know how much of our total water, how much of our total water supply do you think we get out of that well?
A third. Well, total water supply? No, 8.
Okay.
Just to clarify, the five years we're referring to, the way the contract was structured is we made an upfront payment 5 years ago. We had the option not to extend the agreement if we didn't make the second easement payment after 5 years, because the board at the time wanted time to see if this was a well that we wanted or not. And so now that we're 5 years in and it is a very good well, we decided we want to keep that agreement in place, so that's why the second payment.
And has the property owner continued to be a reasonable person to deal with?
Well, we try and avoid disturbing her. We've had problems in the past with her, but because she initially wanted to back out of the whole agreement after we had already spent over $50,000 developing the well. And so we had to go to arbitration, and we got an agreement that won the arbitration. So we continue to operate it, and we have certain things that we have to do before we go in there. We can't just go. We have an access easement, and we also can go around the back way and work on our stuff. If something happened to where we had to have a bigger vehicle go in there, a crane, we would have to use the access easement, which she would have to have proper notice, and she would have to let us in. Mike and Michael mentioned at the last meeting that we do this, the sheriff has our agreement, and if there's any problems, we can call him out and take care of the situation. So we'll be able to get in there. It's just a little touchy. But so far it's been fine.
I think the answer is yes.
That's kind of what I started out.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go on too long, but well, there's a history there, and it's hasn't been the best.
Is that the well by the Moose Lodge?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a great history, and we'll discuss it some other time.
No, I've gone through it.
Interesting case. Anything else on this matter? Any questions? Item C. Sharon.
So we're underway. They finished up on Russell and David Lee. Right.
They finished installing the mains on right. Russell and David Lee. They put in a few fire hydrants. We're working with CCWD on a couple of those hydrants, four of them, I think. That way we can use smaller mains up there, and there's only a few homes. We don't need an 8-inch main in there, and CCWD's 8-inch main runs down Russell. So we approached them, have an agreement with them to install fire hydrants using their line. So we can use an 1.5-inch line for part of it, part of Russell, and the rest of it's going to be 8-inch going up to it, up to Russell and part of David Lee. We have one hydrant that we're calling our hydrant on David Lee there. So things are going along good. We have construction meetings every week. Any issues come up, we deal with them between the contractor and us, or between homeowners. If there's any problem with them, traffic control has been pretty good. We've closed Russell and David Lee, but the homeowners that live along there, of course, can come and go. And I haven't heard any negative things. I talked to a couple of people up there, and they think the guys are doing a good job, the construction crew. They work well with the traffic people driving through, and there can be some irritating people doing it. They come in 3 or 4 times, I have to go do this. How do I get through there? But anyway, they're working well with them. The service connections haven't been put in yet, but they are starting, actually Friday they started working on those, on David Lee. They did hit our old pipe a few times, and the Russell Drive is the beginning, it's the oldest part of the subdivision. That little house that you see when you turn on the Russell on the left-hand side used to be the real estate office for Blue Lake Springs. So it's old, and there's some pipes in there. We don't know where they are, and the pipe that is in there changes from different sizes, inch and a half to 2 inch, and then it goes down to another inch and a quarter. Weird pipes. So they've hit our pipe a few times. We've had a few shutdowns, but we don't. This is the hardest part of the project, because it's so old. We've got our pipe kind of weaves in and out, and there's rocks, so they just went around the rocks. So they're digging, trying to put a main in, and they've hit it a few times. But so far, the last few days, we've been doing good. So
they've done well. The site where they're working, I think it's very, from my perspective, I think it's very clean. Like, I think they're doing a really good job with compaction and making it a safe area to drive in once they're done. So, and even when they're working in it, they're very polite. So, it helps if you have a big truck. They're nicer to me than a big truck. They also had you approved one change order in the past month. That was something that was needed for the project. It's about $15,000, just so the board knows. It was $15,867. So,
are the mains being tested before they're backfilled? Are they center loaded and inspected, or
the county inspector's out there, and he doesn't come all the time. He's not there every day, but the county road or public works inspector comes out, checks it out. We have our own inspectors that work for us for the engineering firm, but they're out there all the time. They take pictures. The mains are not going to be pressure tested until all the services are put in, the mains complete, and the fire hydrants are in. Then they'll pressure test them and sanitize them. So we're in the process.
Are they on schedule?
Yes.
Yeah. They're doing 300 to 400 feet a day of the mains. And up. Working on the mains, so.
Right.
And they start on Moran Thanksgiving week. So, but they're not working Thursday and Friday of Thanksgiving week. So, but they're going to try and get Moran done earlier rather than later. So.
In the category, for what it's worth, they're using a lot of local labor.
Yeah.
Which is good for the community.
Yeah, that's good.
Question came up about key cutting across driveways. And the contractor, if they have to cut across a person's driveway, takes care of business and puts some covering down. They come back later with a hot mix truck and a rollers, and they do it again. To make it's a second application, and they do it when they have a whole series of driveways they have to do to replace with a like and kind. So it's a much better looking job. If you look at some of them now, it looks like they've just thrown down some blacktop with a shovel and walked away. Well, that's what they've done, but they're going to come back and redo all of them. Somebody had asked that. I think you asked that.
Yeah,
okay. I didn't get back to you. Sorry about that. Any other comments or questions? Questions of on the project? No surprises thus far.
No.
Excellent. Okay. Committee reports. Tom Schneider.
Yep.
Sorry to interrupt you. You're up.
Okay. Long range planning committee section of the package. We've got a chart there that says topics for discussion. There's a lot of shuffling of paper that's very loud on my end.
Go ahead.
Shall we mute us so we can just listen to you? Is this it, the mute? So we're going to mute us so you can just talk, okay?
So the in the topics of discussion page, the first area that I'm going to talk about is the draft reserves fund policy and the reserves fund operating procedure. So last month, during our board meeting, we reviewed in pretty good detail the draft reserves fund policy. And through discussions with the Long Range Planning Committee, we determined that the policy is very detailed, very extensive, and a recommendation was made to provide a more condensed version of the policy that's more concise and direct and to the point and more directed at the day-to-day responsibilities of the water company management and staff. So based on that, what we decided to do was generate an accompanying document that is being called the operating procedure, so the reserves fund operating procedure. So in the package, there's a copy of the operating procedure. It's about less than half the length of the policy, and it's at a more summary level, provides an introduction, a purpose, scope, definition, and then it gets into the procedure steps and responsibilities that identify all the tasks associated with implementing the policy on a day-to-day basis and who's responsible for each of those. And so it talks about the procedure steps and responsibilities associated with accounting for the reserves, funding the reserves, use and authority of reserves, reserve reporting and monitoring, annual evaluation and review, and the target fund levels. And then it has an area that shows what references are used as part of implementing the procedure, and then a revision history. So as part of that, last month there was discussion on the reserves policy that I want to touch on. One of them was, I believe it was Lee Bateman, described how in the reserves policy, it identifies what I'm going to call allocated reserves. So it has different sections. There's about five or so different reserves that are mentioned in there that have dollar amounts associated with them. And so in that policy, it shows those various reserve categories amounting to about $800,000. What Lee brought up was the fact that besides those allocated reserves, there's also what are called unallocated reserves. And so I think what Lee did after our meeting between then and now, he has had discussions with the accounting firm that does our annual audit, and broached that topic with them. And so when we talk about unallocated reserves, that is, it's the total amount of our liquid assets. So the total amount within our bank account amounts to a certain dollar value. And if you take, we have the bank accounts that are our total liquid assets. We have restricted cash that is with the money that's been set aside so far for our USDA required reserves. And then, in addition, we have current debt obligations that reduce the amount of those assets. So those debt obligations are accounts payable, accrued wages, and IRA, and the current portion of our long-term debt. So what Lee provided to myself was a copy of the 2017 year-end accounting showing this, which the bottom line of the assets minus the debt obligations came to $614,000. So $614,000 is really the total amount of our reserves. So when Lee mentioned last month that we don't just have to account for those allocated reserves, we also need to make sure that we're accounting for unallocated reserves. So the total reserves would be that process that I just mentioned, the liquid assets minus the current debt obligations. Lee, I don't know if you want to add any more to that than I just described.
I guess only one thing. That number represents, and I'm going to use a word that I don't ever use when I'm talking in a nonprofit environment, that number represents our total profit since the beginning of time. So it's the net difference between all the income we had and all the expense, and you do that as of the end of your fiscal year. For us, it is December 31st, because that's the end of your budget. You don't have any, or you have outstanding obligations, but you take that into account. You take a photograph in time. That's your total reserves. And then you move through the next fiscal year, and presumably you're operating in a positive environment, so you don't change that reserve number during the year, and then at December 31st of 18, go through the same calculation. And all I was trying to point out with the unallocated is, if you have allocated in this, it was 614 of 600,000, you have to have some place to park the extra $14,000. So the unallocated account is really the mathematical difference between what you've allocated and what the total is.
Hey, does everyone understand that, or are there any questions?
Any questions at all? No.
Can you hear us?
He can hear us. Do you have a question?
Go ahead, Tom.
Right. So the other areas that I wanted to touch on that came out of last month's meeting were a request was made for us to double check with Ebbets Pass Accounting on whether or not our operating procedure violates any types of accounting policies or procedures for not-for-profit organizations. So I know that that Lee Schmid went to Sandy at Ebbets Pass Accounting. She got a reading that she saw nothing within the policy that would be against any legal or accounting type policies that would be violated. So I don't know if Lee made copies of the KLR, a CPA firm that I found online had done a white. And
everyone has one, yes.
Yes, we have them, Tom.
Okay. So I just thought it was interesting reading through that white paper. It talks about reserves in a not-for-profit organization, and just it mentions in there what reserves are usually related to: fixed asset repair and replacement. We've got that in ours. Operational issues and unforeseen problems in special projects. So those are the areas that our policy covers. The only area where it talks about you need to be careful is down under how much can you keep in reserve. So in this section, they talk about this is the only reserve that has a limit on its size. The size of the specific purpose reserve is governed by the size of the specific purpose. General operating reserves, however, should not exceed 300% of the organization's annual operating budget per the Better Business Bureau. Why is Giving Alliance a charity watchdog group? So, our operating reserve that we spell out within the policy is based on 3 months of operating budget. So we don't even come close to exceeding a 300% of the operating budget. So, but that's the one area that we would need to make sure that we keep into account as we move forward in our operating policy and procedures. Other than that, Andy came up with a couple comments on the operating policy, the reserves policy, just within the last week here that that I'll bring up. I know we talked about the policy in the last meeting, but Andy felt that in the, if you remember back in the emergency reserve category, for that one specific reserve, because of the nature of an emergency, we decided that there, that Dave, as general manager, had the authority to move forward in any emergency situation and using part of that reserve. So Andy feels that, as in the case of the other reserves, that we really should probably have a little more control than just one person approving the use of that reserve. And he suggested that we have one other person in that approval loop and perhaps have a put a place a cap on it of maybe like $10,000. So that's one area that I guess we can open back up for discussion. Another one was the bad debt reserve that we mentioned in the policy as part of the operating operating reserve. So my recommendation is that we put any type of approval of the policy and the procedure on hold. I'm going to be coming back in about a week, and my intent is to have a couple long-range planning committee meetings. I'll be back, you know, from Thanksgiving through New Year's, and to make sure, rather than rush approval of the policy and or the procedure, I would rather make sure that we talk through them and have a full everyone on board as far as the committee is concerned, and bring that back to the board in January. Any comments from the committee on that?
Yeah, Tom, this is Andy. I just opened it up. Yeah, for the board's information, the reason I raised the question about the emergency reserve issue that Tom just addressed is that, you know, we could conceivably have an emergency that has tens of thousands of dollars of potential liability, and to have no control over the decision-making, you know, around that, I felt that, you know, it was appropriate to have two levels of approval. My recommendation to Tom, you know, when I addressed the issue with him, was that, you know, it would be, you know, Dave plus, you know, Bob as chairman of the board to, you know, approve, you know, any expense above a certain level. I only threw out $10,000 because that was the first number that came to mind, but it could be, something, significantly higher than that. But I think, from a prudent fiscal management perspective, having two levels of approval on major expenses is would be, in our shareholders' best interest.
Other comments? Okay, Tom, to reiterate, you're not asking for any board action now, correct?
Right. I would suggest that, I've already brought up to the committee, potential for having at least one long-range planning committee meeting the first week or two in December, and possibly have a couple of them, because there's plenty of things for us to talk through. But I would like to use part of one of those meetings to make sure that we're all on the same page. It's a lot easier to do it in person and go back through the policy and the operating procedure and come up with a final recommendation to bring back to the board in January.
Okay.
A couple other things that I show in that topic for discussion section. When I put together the policy and came up with the reserve categories and the dollar amounts, it, as I mentioned earlier, it came out to about $800,000 in reserves. So I mentioned here, the other things we need to talk about is how and when do we implement the reserves, and how do we reflect these in budgets, and how do we fund, do we fund them all at once or incrementally over a certain number of years? So when we talked about the policy last month, $800,000, that was with the understanding at that time that we were going to submit our reimbursement for all the USDA engineering work that had already occurred, that amounted to about $1.1 million. So during the meeting, we decided to hold off requesting reimbursement for that work, and not have to pay interest on that $1.1 million until we get further along in the project and we feel that, we need that reimbursement. Or just wait till the end of the project and get reimbursed at that time so we're not having to pay interest on our interim loan during the construction period.
Right.
So if we don't get that reimbursement back into our budget, we don't have $800,000 to put into a reserve account. So I believe that's part of the discussion that we need to have, in finalizing how we move forward with the policy.
And we'll calendar that as well for January?
Yes.
All right.
Actually, Tom, I think when I spoke with Lee Schmid yesterday, we discussed in the next progress payment to CoBank that we're going to bill for 2016 for the $127,000. So just to kind of tide us through the rest of the year. And then in January, we start getting a huge, we start getting all the shareholder fees to tide us over.
Right. So,
okay.
We need to make sure that, our office there, meaning Lee and Dave, and us, as we talk through how we're going to implement the reserves policy, that we're all on the same page about how we're going about the reimbursement request. So, last month, what I thought was discussed was, let's hold off on the $1.1 million of all the engineering that had already occurred and we had already paid for out of our budget, and as we go forward, start getting reimbursed for everything going forward. So in talking to Lee, I know that she wants to wait until we get into the new year. She didn't want to start the reimbursements for the engineering, you know, at this point here.
I think it became a problem that we couldn't start
in the middle
of the construction of the whole process. So we needed to go back to the very beginning and start billing from the beginning.
Right.
So we can't just pick up like we were hoping, like starting July 2018 and getting reimbursed. USDA wants us to go back to the beginning of the project and start being reimbursed.
And that hopefully happens November or December.
So we're hoping November or December that we can get the $127,000. And then we can start looking at the 2017 costs, and maybe we submit those later in 2019. But we can discuss that later, I guess. So.
Yeah. And that will affect, you know, how we recommend implementing the reserves policy. You know, and a lot of the documents that I read on reserves, you know, and talking through it with Dempsey Engineering as well, you know, you usually build up your reserves over multiple years. It's not like we have to fund the whole thing at once. You know, as long as we have a plan on how much we need in total in the reserves and have a plan to get there, even if it's over 5 years or whatever, that's how we will build those reserves.
The important thing is to get it.
If there's no more questions on the reserves policy or operating procedure, the co-bank is interest. So as part of the budgeting process, I guess what I was going to talk about next was the engineering, USDA engineering budget. I got ahead of myself. So if we look at the page that has MC Engineering contract values at the top, there is, not sure what page it is in your packet, but so what I wanted to do here was just give everybody an update on where we stand on the engineering contract. So their total contract value is $1,784,000. It shows that the billings and payments through the October billing, which was the September invoice, we've spent $1.139 million in total. Of that, about $557,000 was in 2018. These values might be, you know, a thousand or two off, because I know that there was some adjustments made to a few of the invoices, but it's pretty close. So the total engineering contract budget remaining at this point was about $645,000. In their October report, MC Engineering showed, a cost estimated cost to complete of about $616,000. So they're within their budget based on their latest cost to complete. Then below that, I show the construction budget based on the letter of conditions. So you see there that the contract value, $9.456 million, and then the contingency amounted to $10.4 million. Our Mazingo construction contract was right about $8 million. They've had a couple change orders, so the current contract at this point is about $8 million. So you see there that there is room for change orders and any I forgot or surprises that come up based on the fact that we got a nice favorable bid for the construction work.
Do we have any sense at all, Tom, that Mazingo may be aware of what the total USDA approved amount is? In other words, are we at any risk that they're going to just run the meter up so that they get another $2 million?
I'm sure that there's probably a way that they can find that out. I don't know if they know. Would you, Dave, happen to know if they're aware of it?
I don't know if they're aware of it. I'm sure they could be.
Yeah, they know what we were willing to fund. So, where was it? $9.8 million or something?
Mm-hmm.
So,
we should probably assume they know.
I would assume they know because it was public knowledge.
Yeah,
you know, so.
Yeah, all they do is come to a meeting.
Right.
No, it's true.
Well, it hasn't been publicly broadcasted.
But if they listen to our meeting minutes, our meeting. That they are recorded, they
okay.
Would know.
Oh, at the annual meeting, Pedri was there, and those people were there, so.
Yeah.
And everybody would know, probably.
And your concern is that'll influence.
Yeah, there's, so. You know, I always worry with any. You know, contract of this size and with any contractor that, you know, they're just going to, you know, run the meter right up to whatever the maximum amount is. And, you know, while we have roughly $2 million worth of wiggle room, that could disappear pretty quickly. You know, since we've already gone through $50,000 worth of change orders, you know, basically in the first month of construction.
Yeah.
Well, some of those were things we requested.
Mm-hmm.
And some, you know, that the water company wanted them, like hinge lids on for the Carson boxes. And
there was some, and then having the construction crew install regulators on the retrofit meter boxes. We thought about, because what happens when we go in there, and that was a pretty good chunk of money having them. We only had an original 129 retrofits that we're going to have a regulator put in. Because of the higher pressure in the mains. But what we came to realize is that when we do a retrofit, we're going to be going in there and putting a meter in and taking out the regulator that's in there. So we're going to, the homeowner, a lot of them don't even know what a regulator is. They don't know if they need one. We didn't want to just take away that and then tell them, by the way, you need to put one on. We were just doing it for them. And so that was the thing we changed. We requested that. That was a big chunk of money there. As we were going along with the design and through the, you know, that's why we came up with some of these requests, because we see it's really going to end up being better in the end to do this now. And so some of it, I don't anticipate a lot of them. As okay. We're going through the project, we might see things like, you know, they might hit a pipe that they have to, you know, we'll have to go around, we'll have to change the plan or something and go around it because it's causing problems slowing down the construction work. So then we might issue a change order to go out a little further into the road or, you know, that can happen mm-hmm. as we go, because there are some areas where we don't really know what's there. I mean, we've already come across that our pipe has been kind of wiggly.
Meandering,
that's a good word. So anyways, we're watching every one of these situations. We're not just issuing change orders for...
I will say that the engineer is being pretty cognizant of the change orders, so I have to give him some credit there.
Okay.
So between him and us, we're looking at, like, do we really need this to be done? And
that probability always exists.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, which is why I raise it as a...
Absolutely.
It won't be the last time you hear me raise the question.
No,
that's a good question.
No, some of the change orders are things we requested. We understand that. And we've also saved some money on a couple of pieces of the project already. Now, how much that will balance in or not, I don't know. I don't pretend to know, but change orders are a fact of life in this thing, but they're going to be very heavily scrutinized.
And I should say, in you know, that when they were doing the design, when the MC Engineering was doing the design, there were some concerns about how high the cost would come in. So there were things that didn't get included, or they opted for a cheaper, a less expensive alternative, or we just eliminated things from the project. Because, you know, we were concerned about the bids coming in so high.
Right.
So, you know, you're probably going to see some things that, okay, now that we have some room.
You have to add it back.
Add it back, yeah, in.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I understand
so,
that.
Anyway, because if we'd like everything to be updated and, you know, in 2 years, like, we're dead and we don't have to do anything for another 50 years when I'm dead. So, I probably I'll live longer than that, so, I don't know.
Okay.
So, the amount that I'm showing down there, I showed in yellow on the chart. It includes Amendment 4 and the CNEX page. So, as part of the MC Engineering contract value, there is a section within their contract called Additional Services. So, if we move to the next page, that their total estimate to complete includes Amendment 4, which has not been fully approved yet. So I believe, Sharon, do you know when they're gonna come forward? I know that you've requested it a couple times, or Dave, do you know when they're gonna provide that to us?
They were mumbling, suggesting something about next week before Thanksgiving, because they're all going to disappear. John's disappearing for a week because of Thanksgiving, right? But I think they might have other things in that amendment, or they also do a fifth amendment. There are things that they've done that were not anticipated in the original scope, but there were cost savings to our project, such as the spoil site. There were a lot of meetings they had to do, and some negotiations that had to occur that, you know, were not anticipated. And it saves us a lot of money. They don't have to haul this. What's been excavated, they don't have to haul it down the mountain. They can just take it somewhere for free. So there are some other unanticipated costs, I think, that we might see. But they were saying next week sometime. But isn't that what
yes.
you said?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm guessing we're like December 1st.
Probably
because
of right.
how they work.
Yes.
So.
Based on their last monthly report to us, what I've done on the next page here is I copied in what they were showing as Amendment 4 at that time. It sounds like there's going to be other things that will be added into that Amendment 4. But so as part of their additional services budget, they had these areas identified within there, and they're now asking for our permission to use that additional services budget to cover those things. So with the surveying services and construction staking and the materials testing services throughout the construction period. So we'll see, you know, we'll evaluate that when we receive it. But this just shows, based on the engineering contract, the different amendments or addendums that they've come forward with that are using up that additional services budget. So the next page, I just wanted to touch on the CoBank interim loan. I have requested from John Pedry an updated burn down plan. So there's certain things that have occurred since May 23rd when I had last estimated the interest that we will pay through the construction period. So I mentioned there that there's a revision in process. John mentioned in a conference call that we had a couple days ago that he's working on that. But the interest, estimated interest, was based on the first draw of our loan coming back in June. As we know, we didn't have the first draw until October. Another big change will be the pre-purchase of mainline piping in order to get the piping at the current current rate or the current cost of the piping. We know that in 2019 the cost is going to go up substantially, so they Mazingo asked for permission to buy all the piping, the mainline piping up front. And as we know that the construction value came in much lower than we had originally planned, but we know that there's going to be change orders coming through. So based on everything we know now, John's coming up with a revised burn down plan that I will put into the spreadsheet again. What's his name at the CoBank has also provided us with some updated interest rates. They've gone up a little bit, so we'll factor that in as well, and we'll see what the interest amounts to. Right now, Lee has a placeholder within the budget of $458,000 for next year of interest that we will be paying. So once we get that revised burn down plan, we'll figure that out and see if that goes up or down. Any questions on that?
Questions of the board?
Okay.
Any questions?
I'm just going to touch briefly on the asset management plan and the capital asset inventory database. There, up until 2 days ago, I didn't have any updates. So we had a conference call, Dave, Sharon, and I, with John Pedri and Mark from MC Engineering, and we talked through that. So a month or two ago, we agreed with them that their proposed asset management plan from a few months ago that they submitted, the proposal was about $44,000. In talking through that, you know, there are certain sections that we felt we probably didn't need in our plan, other areas where we might be able to do part of the work ourselves. So at that point, we decided to just move forward with what we feel is the most critical first step that needs to be done, and that's putting together an assets inventory database. So they've been working on that. We authorized $5,000 for them to get going on that. So in the conference call a couple days ago, they mentioned and described the progress that they've made on that. They've developed an interactive GIS model or platform for the database. They concentrated initially on all the piping. So they've been working on populating that section of the database. From there, we will need to gather all the information on all the other sections of our infrastructure, meaning, you know, that the treatment plant, the meters, and all the other sections, the storage tanks, everything. And so what they're going to do over the next couple weeks is put together an updated proposal on what the building the rest of this inventory database is going to take. So I think Dave and Sharon, I don't know, the 40 hours that Mark mentioned is what they're estimating the additional amount of hours to be. So what they, in their proposal, they estimated about $9,700 to build the database. Now that they've gotten this far into it, I think they're estimating that it may take 40 hours more than that $9,700 to build the database. Dave and Sharon, is that what you were hearing, or is that not complete?
That's complete. A part of what they're doing is, you know, while what we need for the asset management plan is basically an Excel spreadsheet that shows us the how much our assets are worth and project out in the future when they need to be replaced. The other part of the database that they showed us is putting everything, all the pipes, the new pipes that we're putting in the ground right now, is to put in GIS. So that way, in the future, we won't be guessing where are these pipes and relying only on paper maps. The staff will be able to come back and look and go, oh, here's where the pipe is, and here's how big it is. And so the extra 40 hours, I believe, is for the...
To finish up.
To convert everything that was done in AutoCAD and put that in ArcGIS. And they also will need to figure out how much it would take to put in the other third of the development that isn't included in this infrastructure project. But I think we all agreed. Billy was there. I think we all agreed it looked like a great tool to have in the future. And now that everything's really fresh in their minds, they know how everything works, this is a good time to put everything in that database. So.
And they can go in, the workers, the field crew can go in and make it add things, put a history on parts of the system, and record leaks. You know, it's pretty handy.
And eventually we'll put in the service laterals and the meters. You know, so it'll be all encompassing. But then everything will be up to date at some point in time in the next couple of years.
Makes sense.
So bottom line is it's going to be an interactive tool that we will have at our disposal in the future. So that the inventory database, in my opinion, is definitely the most critical item of the asset management plan that I think we need to focus on. That will ultimately establish the basis for our capital assets reserve. So that's what they are also going to be bringing back is a recommendation for the rest of the asset management plan, at which time we're going to review that and determine, what we want to do is make sure we have a plan that's useful to Dave and his staff. That's not just some, massive plan where it just sits on a shelf and nobody reads it. We want it to be something that's going to be useful and not pay for anything that's above and beyond what we really need.
Amen.
Wait a minute, Tom.
Does the database include longevity calculations, predictions?
Yes, it will.
Terrific.
Yeah, it's going to provide the life expectancy of every item listed and when it was installed and how much life is left on it.
How much it costs.
All that information is going to be used in developing the capital asset reserves.
Terrific.
So the next area I just wanted to touch on, Sharon and I and Dave and Billy have had a meeting along with John Pedry. We've talked about additional USDA project scope. So Dave and Billy have come up with several items that they want considered to be added into the USDA project. So based on that, Sharon built an Excel spreadsheet that lists those. She's incorporated a lot of the information from the discussions that we've had to date. And my recommendation is that in the meeting or two that the Long Range Planning Committee has in December, that we have Dave and Billy and John come in and present this information to the Long Range Planning Committee, fully describe each item of additional scope that they're recommending we incorporate into the project so that the Long Range Planning Committee uses that information to decide on a recommendation to bring back to the board. So, Sharon, I don't know if you want to add any more on that one.
I think you covered it.
Yeah, well, there'll be that will definitely be a topic for the Long Range Planning Committee in December. The last area I wanted to talk about was based on additional information that Sharon had provided to me over the last month or so. We have updated information through September on the water meter usage. So I just wanted to quickly touch on some of that information and show the data that we have for the last 3 years or so, and that information will be part of the discussion in the Long Range Planning Committee for December as well. We'll get back to discussing the usage levels and what of that usage information we want to take into account as we continue to talk about our rate development. So the first page after the little cover page there for water meter usage, we first started collecting data back in 2016, and you can see the information there. We had the different usage levels. I'm not going to, you know, that's kind of past history. If you look at the last 2 years, we have all of 2017 data there summarized, as well as 2018, January through September. And it's really interesting to note how close 2017 and 2018 are. You know, if you look at the different usage levels, the categories there, and the amount of readings that fell within those categories, and the amount of cubic feet average for each category, it's amazing how close they are from 2017 to 2018. You know, identical percentages in some cases. You know, the usage levels for readings under 350 cubic feet a month, both years are coming out to 76%. And the average cubic feet are within a few cubic feet. The total average for the year is exactly the same, 309 cubic feet per month average. So it's pretty amazing how building data for that many months and it's coming out so close. At the bottom, I just posted a little blurb of information that I pulled off the USGS government website that just shows, and this is will help us as we discuss usage levels, what the average consumption is per day per person. And it shows for indoor use only, and then for indoor and outdoor use. So one person for indoor use only per month comes out to about 243 to 286 cubic feet per month. Indoor and outdoor use, you can see there, it's 325 to 408 cubic feet per person per month. So all of that will be discussed as well when we talk through our usage information.
So Tom,
I'm not going to get into on the next page.
Tom, this is Andy. Let me interrupt for a moment because something doesn't make sense mathematically in your little blue box. It says indoor average, only average consumption per day per person is 60 to 70 gallons or 8 to roughly 9 cubic feet. So if you have a two-person household, you know, that's 18, let's say it's 17 cubic feet per day times 30 is a heck of a lot bigger number than the 286 cubic feet that you've calculated.
Well, the 286 shows there that it's per person. So if you have two, it would be double that.
Okay, so what that says is that the national average is much higher than what our data.
Right, exactly, and that's what I want to discuss with.
Not appreciably, no.
Well, yeah.
Now that's full-time users, though. We've got a lot of just part-time users. So how can you compare us like apples and oranges?
Well, that's the difficulty. Yeah. We're always going to have a difficulty. Yeah.
So just keep in mind, if it is two people, and say our full-time users have two people in their household, so just keep in mind that it's about 500 cubic feet per month. And in a few charts, I'll show you what our full-time users are averaging.
Oh, okay.
It's a lot closer to that with this is showing here. So we'll get to that in a minute. The next page, as I mentioned, has a lot of detail. I just wanted everyone to see, you know, the detailed information month by month on how we're arriving to those summary levels. But just real quickly, one thing I want to point out is the big differences you see between the winter months and the summer months. So in 2017 there, if you look at January and then look across to the right and see July, you could see how people, the readings under 350 are 82% in January, but only 59% in July. So, and then the next one down, February, 85% compared to 67. So you can see how much the usage levels go up during the summer months. Just a point of interest.
Tom, just a question. I assume the under 350 includes zero?
It includes zero when I can see in the detailed data that readings are being done on. So if it's like, you know, 60, 20, 0, 0, 20, 50, I count the zeros. If it's zero all the way across the information that I'm receiving, I'm not counting those zeros.
So that's not in the 88%.
Correct.
So the 88% is an indication of those for people who were here in January using water.
No, it could be people that are not here.
Well, that's kind of my point, is that if in January you would expect more cabins to be vacant the entire month, if that cabin is counted the same as a cabin in July in which they are present, you've got some distortion in it seems to be in averages.
I feel you have to average. If water is being used across the year, but then in one month that there's no usage, I gotta count that into the averages.
Okay. I think you were drawing conclusions about the 88% and the 59, and the intervening variable is people in January, the 88, are not here at all. Is that the point you're trying to make? They're not here and they're not using water in January, but in July they're here and using water?
Yeah, that definitely comes into
the
equation.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I'm not going to really talk about 2018, the details page.
But you know, that is an interesting point, though. When you stop to really pull the wings of the fly apart, you know, it does draw down the average. You know, it would be interesting to take a look at, you know, what are the people who are here, what is the average of the water that they're using?
Right. It's a different number.
So you mean to take out the zero readings?
Yeah.
So if there was no water used, they don't get...
Right.
So I'm going to move to the summary, the one that starts showing the graph of... those 2017 and 2018, and it kind of just shows in a graphic form what I already mentioned. You know, if you look at 2017 and 2018, you know, that the average per month in both years is 309 cubic feet. 76% of the readings
in both years were under 350 cubic feet per month. You can see there the summer months is when the averages go above the 350. So I'm assuming that we'll probably see, once we get the October data, we'll probably see that the same 4 months are over. It's possible this year maybe it did come in under 350, but you can see there that it's kind of, you can see the kind of the same curvature in the bars, you know, that from 2017 to 2018 and the usage per month. On the next page, this shows the percent of readings that were under 350 a month. So it just shows in percentage 82, 85, 86 at across the year. And as I mentioned, 75% of the annual readings average more or less than 350. And so one of the takeaways is in both years, only 24% of the readings were above 350 cubic feet a month, but they consumed 73% of the water. On the next page, I get into a little information on full-time versus part-time comparisons. And so this goes back to 2015 and 2016 when we were actually looking at the part-timers and separated them out from the full-timers. So in 2015, we were in Drought Action Plan Stage 3. And if you look there, the full-timers less than 350 were 36%. The part-timers less than 350 were 89%. So a big difference. And you can see there the full-time average, 513. So going back to that other chart, the USGS information showed that the usage would, for two people, would come out to about 500 cubic feet a month. So that's exactly, you know, what the full-timers were averaging back in 2015. The overall average was 255. Then in 2016, the Drought Action Plan Stage 2, so it wasn't quite as stringent. You see the usage levels there. Only 24% of full-timers were under 350, 75% of part-timers were under 350. The full-time average went up from the year before at 513 up to 816. And the part-timers went from 182 to 281. The average was 399. The last page...
Any deduction, Tom, and maybe I throw this over to Dave as well, as to why the full-time consumption went up roughly 60% year over year?
Watering their trees.
Outdoor use.
Rows of fig trees.
Well, I have a question, Tom. How did you define, how did you identify people as full-time and part-time?
We went through a whole exercise where we went through a process of, through Dave and Lee in the office, and communicating with a lot of the homeowners exactly which were full-timers versus part-timers.
Okay.
People provided their information to the water company.
Okay.
And that's how we use it.
Okay. I have a suggestion. I asked Lee to develop a list of everyone who received their water bill with an Arnold address.
But I have friends who don't live here. They're part-timers, and they have an Arnold address on the water bill. I have several friends like that. So it's not...
That maintain a P.O. box
yes,
up here?
Yes.
Like
okay. Then, you know.
So that means that list is... The number of part-timers are fewer. What you're saying is the number of part-timers are fewer than that.
No, the number of full-timers. You can't use that. I'm saying you can't rely on that list.
Okay.
To identify only your full-timers. Because there's part-timers on that list.
Correct. But if that list is 250 people, that means the number of part-timers is less than 250.
number of full-timers.
No.
Full-time, sorry, I'm sorry.
Yeah, full-time.
The number of full-timers or less. Because presumably a full-timer, person who lives here full-time, does not have an address at some other location.
No, but not everyone,
but like,
not every part-timer excludes the post office here.
I understand that.
Yeah, so what we do, what we intentionally, I was part of the survey, and we reached out to those we felt were full-time people and asked them a series of questions, and they were, and the same with the part-timers, and created the category, two categories, split categories accordingly. Our best guess at any one time, 12-15% of the entire system is full-time. And that hasn't changed. Water usage hasn't changed, and seasons go up and change, the months change, the snow comes and goes, it's still 12-15%. Real estate transactions sort of back that up. Sort of. Not everyone that buys a home up here is a full-timer. And we already know that. So there were some pains that we went through, STAT went through, to identify the full-timers from the part-timers. Otherwise, this is just a waste of time. And what's incredible is that for two or three years now that we're putting numbers together, is they're fairly consistent. There's nothing that really jumps out here that, you know, there are one or two people that we talk to are full-timers that says, I don't care what you charge, I have the money, we'll pay. Because they want to water their trees, and they're using thousands of gallons a week. And then there's the exception of the guy that lives in Arizona, comes up six weeks a year, or 6 days a year, and that's it. One of the difficulties we will always have in this particular system is that our infrastructure is geared for full-time operation, but only 12-15% use it. Now that number it moves laterally a little bit, but it doesn't go up and down.
And I will say that when the staff went out and asked, we did a survey and we asked, they got about 700 or 800 people who responded, mm-hmm. if they were full time or part time or vacation rental. So we did get a lot of information, and we can go back if we decide that we want to go back and look at 2017 and 18 and identify which ones of those are full and part time. That have meters. That problem is, as we know, a lot of those people don't have meters. So.
Right.
But, you know, we
it's
can go back.
It's whatever in the sample.
Right.
Whoever meters it, right.
So anyway, that's.
Yeah.
Actually, with the meter. Go ahead.
I did, based on the 2018 data that we've collected, I went back to that database that we had that identified the full people. I didn't want to spend a ton of hours on it, but it was pretty easy for me to identify 16 households that I knew were full-time people from that data. And just to show, you know, what it's looking like this year with that very, very small sample size, this last chart shows it's only 16 people. Those 16 households are averaging 699 cubic feet a month, and this shows how that spread month to month. And that's what I mentioned there. That's one area that I think the Long Range Planning Committee needs to include in our discussions as we go through the meter usage data. And see what, if anything, we want to take away from this information.
Questions or comments?
We see there the annual average of this small sample size is 699. Back in 2015, it was 513. In 2016, 816. And now it's showing, 699. So it's gone down, and I think part of that is probably accurate reflection of how much people are hurting more these days.
Quick comment, just to put this into context a little bit. The average use per person in California in 2017 was 90 gallons per day, outdoor and indoor included.
Per person?
Per person.
the new conservation mandate that Governor Brown signed just this last legislative session requires an average daily per person consumption maximum of 55 gallons per day per person for indoor use. And they haven't figured out how they're going to regulate outdoor use yet. That requirement will go into effect in 2022, so there is time for water agencies to figure out how they're going to do that. But over the next several years, the average consumptive or average per person use in California should be declining significantly. That's the legislative landscape right now, and down to 50 gallons per day by 2030.
Outdoor water use in California is currently and has been allocated based on landscape size. Mm-hmm. So if you're got a 50 by 100 lot with a 2,000 square foot footprint of a house on it, you've got X number of, it's related to ET, evapotranspiration, and it's called maximum allowable water budget. And that is given as a percentage of ET. Currently, it's at about 50% of evapotranspiration. And that number has come down over the last 20 years from 100% to 80% to 50%, and will very likely end up at 30 to 25% by more efficient irrigation, more efficient planting, less lawn, more natives, that sort of mm-hmm. thing. But that new bill is going to be a big game changer.
It is a game changer, and they're also, like I said, DWR is still trying to figure out how they're going to set those outdoor water use limits going forward, but they're talking about using LIDAR and not basing it necessarily on lot size, but specific conditions in each different geographic area, using all sorts of new technologies. So it remains to be seen yet how that's going to be done and how they're going to set those targets, but it will be going down.
Lee,
are those limits placed on the water company or the individual shareholder?
On the water company, on water districts. I need to do a little bit more digging and confirm whether or not mutual water companies like us are subject to that conservation mandate. I think our operating assumption for now should be that it is, but let me do some more research and figure out whether or not mutuals are subject to that.
The water allowance in the past has always been based on the size of the project, so that small tract houses were not usually targeted, and large projects like parks and golf courses and cemeteries, those sorts of things, were much more scrutinized. And I don't think there's any doubt that we're going to stay on some sort of a tie to the size of the project. So
sure.
In our area, it's, you know, most of the lots are what, a third of an acre?
Mm-hmm. These same rules apply to people in Southern California?
Yeah.
They don't know.
Well, they're actually way ahead of Northern California in general in terms of efficiency.
Much better at water conservation.
Much more efficient use of water in Southern California.
I wonder.
I'm sorry, the point of my question was, do we become the enforcers of this 55, or whatever the limit is?
Yeah, so the average will be across, the water districts will be responsible for that, yes. And there was, when this was first signed, there was a lot of, fear amongst people that there was going to be some, water cops knocking on people's doors saying you use more than 55 gallons a day, and that's not the case. It will be up to water agencies to average, to get their average per capita usage below those numbers. So it doesn't mean that each individual house has to be below that. It just means that across the district, the average has to drop below that.
Well, and that's going to be very interesting for us for all the reasons we've talked about places not being occupied.
Well, for us, it should be very easy.
Yeah, it should be easy, because we'll be under.
We're probably already there.
Yes. If you looked at 1,700 homes and assume two people per home, we'd be I bet we'd be under the 55.
And attack those people with the comments that it's my money, I'll pay whatever it costs. Make them pay. Use tiered rates.
Mm-hmm.
So those people that are using 1,400 cubic feet.
It'll be interesting, though. I'll have to dig into the... They're still writing the regs on this legislation, and we'll have to dig into it. It says 55 gallons per day per person. Does that mean per full-time resident? How are we going to determine that? Does it mean an average occupancy rate per household? The specific how the regulations are shaped will really inform how this applies to us.
I'm sorry, who is the other person that was speaking?
Jeff Jones.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments? Tom, do you have anything else?
No, that's it.
That's a lot. Thank you very much. We're going to take 10 minutes. All this water talk.
I'm off here for 5 days. Does that count as one person days, or do you take my cabin days? How many people are there? That's my
personal meet and greet.
Times 365.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, we don't know.
I see you have an agenda.
That turns out completely different. The regulations are not going to be different.
No, I have to do that.
Do that. We get the recorder. Do that. Tom, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, good. Confirming you're complete, correct? Yes.
He's shaking his head, yes.
Shakes head in the affirmative. Okay, item next is unfinished business, 2019 budget. There's actually a large copy provided to you, so the other one looked more like an eye test.
Is there an extra one anywhere?
Mm-hmm, I have one.
Large one? Everyone should have a copy of this.
Yeah. I might have stolen this yesterday.
Lee?
Hello. This is the budget that was presented
last month
at the last meeting, with the exception that we've added the three columns that would indicate what the revenue would be with a 3%, a 4%, and a 5% increase, and what the net at the very bottom would be. And if you want a summary, that was in the packet. Less interested in all the detail and you're more interested in the effect, you can see that the top of this shows the various categories of fees that we charge and what the impact would be if we left it with no change, 3%, 4%, or 5%. And if you're interested in what the bottom line number is, it's $15,000 per percent. So that a 3% increase increases our net bottom line by $46,000. A 4% increases it by $61,000, and those are not additive. And a 5% would increase it by $77,000. So that's the impact of the three fee increases that are being presented here. So I think the question before the board is then, do you have any questions about the details of the budget? And then which level of fee structure do we want to approve for next year?
Okay, let's take the details first. And Dave will make a recommendation on the fee increases.
Okay.
So, for the board, are there any questions about the matter of the budget? The majority is a rollover, we all understand that, but are there any questions about any of the details?
So the 2019 preliminary budget column is representative of what? How was that column developed?
We go. Well, Lee and I go over the previous year. We see where money was spent, how much was spent. We also look ahead to see in the next year what are we going to need to spend money on, and come up with the with that preliminary budget.
So is it safe to assume then, based on what you said, that that preliminary budget already includes a number of increases from prior year budget?
Yes.
And in some cases, decreases.
Decreases.
Includes okay. Both increases yeah, and decreases. It's more driven by experience.
So then why do we then need to make a decision about 3%, 4%, or 5%?
That would cover, like, say, a 3% if we actually in here the 10% increase for all employees.
Wait, I don't know. No, we're talking about a different matter. I think we're talking about something different.
That would be what the shareholder would pay.
Right.
The question.
Additional 3, 4, 5.
Yeah. The 3, 4, and 5 was presented as options to the board, reflective of anticipated increases for 2019 to the shareholder.
Okay.
And I put this to Dave and staff, and they're prepared to make a recommendation as to 3, 4, or 5. As far as the preliminary budget column for 2019, again, that's based on past year's experience. Some anticipated matters that we know are going to cost more, other areas that should cost less. In accepting the overall budget, we'll have to do two things. One, to accept the rollover, and two is to accept a recommendation on a fee increase.
So that being said, if we look towards the bottom of this budget sheet, at just up from the bottom, the difference line.
Mm-hmm.
So if I read this correctly, the 2019 preliminary budget shows an increase of $163,170.
Proposed, that's correct.
No,
that's the carryover. That's what's left.
I don't know what you're saying.
That is the mathematical difference between the income included in the budget and the expense included in
yes.
the budget.
Right.
And that's
okay. That's not an increase. I'm sorry, Andy. It's not an increase over. I thought you were saying it was an increase over 20 over the last.
Well, I did say that, but you corrected my.
If you move
verbalization
up,
of that, so it is. So basically, it's a profit of $163,000,
Edward,
in the preliminary budget without any sort of a rate increase.
Correct.
That is correct.
Yes.
And if you move up about four lines to the number 1770228, that is the total expense in the preliminary budget, and the number immediately to the left in the white column, 1,193,245, is the total expense in the current year budget. And one of the major differences is that we have included in this year co-bank interest of $458,000 that was not included in the prior year budget. And
yeah,
there's lots of other numbers, but the reason that it's almost $500,000, well, $580,000 difference. $458,000 is made up by that one line item.
Right.
But you are correct, Andy. The budget, if everything happened the way the budget is presented, at the end of the year, we would have a net of $163,170 without changing, at our current rate structure.
Okay.
Without any rate increase.
Correct.
Okay.
So it's interesting I don't know whether you want to have this discussion, but you know, there's some numbers here that I'm trying to understand. So you're increasing the budget by at least $458,000 just because of co-bank interest.
Correct.
But yet the overall budget of 2.134398 is lower than the current run rate of 2018. By $240,000.
I'm sorry, I didn't know what, I'm not sure what line you're on.
Yeah, so if you look at the column 2018 final,
yes,
all the way to the bottom, you see that the total, grand total, is 2.378. Okay,
correct.
I'm trying to understand how we're increasing $458,000 because of co-bank and it's still ending up with a number that's much smaller than the current run rate.
There was expensed out in 2018 fencing for $70,000 that we didn't bring forward for 2019. That's some of it.
Well, you've had to reduce expenses in a significant number of areas.
Significant. And then if you look under distribution, the first line, and again in the 2018 final, the payroll is 67.5. We reduced it to 37.6.
I'm sorry, so Lee. You lost.
Where was that one again?
Distribution.
Right.
The payroll.
Payroll.
In 2018, we had 67.5. And then in 2019, we're anticipating 37.
Oh, that's what you mean. Okay.
Do we lose somebody or are we cutting wages?
We didn't. If you look then directly to the left of the 67.5, you'll see that projected for 2018, we've only been 30,000, so we don't need the 67, so we brought it down.
Okay. So that 37 represents the increase, the recommended increase in wages from actual $30,837 to
$37,635.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
So. The contingency reserve, sorry, D&D, is also in there of $1.184 million in the 2018 final in the late
Oh,
column.
I see, yeah.
So that's going to skew it a little.
So the obvious question then becomes one of why do we even need a rate increase? You know, if we're long 163,000 based upon this document, why do we need a rate increase? Silence.
The cost of the, mm-hmm. our cost of doing business goes up at least 3% a year.
Oh, but that's already big.
No, I understand that.
It's not in the numbers.
That. Number one. Number two, we're focused on building reserves. If we go for, and I will tell you right straight out, I'd be opposed to a zero increase if that's the way things are leaning.
But there should be then. You know, a line item for reserve funding.
There should be. We don't have the reserve program tied down yet. And when you considering matters of the cost of doing business, 3% I feel is an absolute minimum.
Well, theoretically, I don't disagree with you, Bob, but the numbers don't support that.
I understand. We've been in a position where we've had zero increases, and it did not load as well. If our past history has taught us anything, it's don't do it.
Well, if you go back and I'm going to try to remember some of the numbers that Tom was quoting, but his reserve proposal is for total reserves that are, what, Tom, in the neighborhood of $800,000, something like that?
Yes.
and we only have about $600,000 mm-hmm. available for them. So if the board in the future adopts that the recommendation that the Long Range Planning Committee has on the table, you will need to develop an additional $200,000 bottom line to adequately fund that. So this is a way to do it. The other thing that I would suggest is that if we're going to have, well, whenever we institute a new rate structure, we're going to be into a new world in which the shareholders are going to determine by the amount of water they use what our income is. We have lived for a long time with knowing and having a fixed number multiplied by the number of shareholders, and that was our income, and we didn't have to worry about it. Well, regardless of what that percentage is, there is going to be some degree of uncertainty about that, and I would suggest that having perhaps even more than what Tom's suggesting as reserves might be a good idea for the first 2, 3, or 4 years until things settle down, and then if the board has more money in its reserves than it thinks it needs, you can rebate it back to the shareholders in a future year.
Can I make a comment?
Oh, sure.
I just want to remind everybody that over the last couple years, out of our own budget, we've spent $1.1+ million for the USDA that we're going to get reimbursed for. We may be waiting until the end of construction to get that reimbursement, but we have $1.1 million coming back into our budget at the end of this project, at the latest. So there is money that will be coming back to us that will or more than fund that reserve.
Tom, I thought there was some discussion last month about the possibility of not taking that reimbursement since we'd be paying interest on it. Then that would be up to the board's discretion at the time.
Well, what we decided is waiting to get that reimbursement until the construction is over, so we're not paying any interest on it.
I thought the discussion was that we may not take it. We'll wait until the end to decide whether we even need it or not.
That's definitely a decision the board can make as well. But we do have at our disposal at the end of the contract, we have at our disposal $1.1 million that we can ask reimbursement for.
Right. But we're borrowing that.
We would be, yes.
We would be borrowing that money. The board would be borrowing money to establish reserves, and I'm not sure that's the best thing to do.
I agree. I'd rather pay it in this format.
So the additional thing that sticks out on the budget is a line item under the expense summary called CoBank Interest USDA for $458,000. That's the total CoBank projected interest, not the interest that we would be paying in 2019.
Yeah, and Andy, I mentioned earlier that figure is kind of up grabs right now until we redo the spread.
My point is they're plugging into the budget the 100% of what we're currently projecting as the CoBank interest expense for the entire project.
Right, yep.
For 2019 and 2020.
It pretty much should be done in
2019. No.
Halfway through 2020.
We won't get that final interest payment until 2020, right?
Until June 2020.
Yeah. So.
So of that 458, you're probably losing maybe 50,000. I think it's still a viable figure.
How long would we make those interest payments?
Monthly.
Monthly.
There are several line items in there that I think if you take them item by item are overstated.
But better to be overstated than understated. And we still have profit, or we still have money at the end of the year.
Yeah. And yeah, Lee, you and I had that discussion already, and I just wanted to make that point that it's a conservative estimate.
Yes.
What is not in here and concerns me now is MC Engineering costs for 2019.
You have $3.2 million for them in here for 2019.
But it's not included in the upper budget. When this budget was created, it was to take into effect the $1.1 million that was coming in. We thought we would be getting it at the end of this year or the beginning of next.
Of the reimbursement.
And with that being put off to the end of the year, 2019, or possibly even 2020, or possibly not at all, the amount of MC Engineering monies we might want to consider getting reimbursed for when they happen in 2019. That's what this encompasses.
Right. Will they let us request reimbursement for 2019? No, they have to go back in time.
I know it's going to mess up the contracts.
But we could request payment for the meters.
We
and
thought
the
yes. to get instead
absolutely.
The material back.
Looking at reserves, like when I was teaching, the budget reserve was like 15% of your annual budget. Is there any kind of standard of what percentage you should have in your reserve compared to your annual budget? Looking at this $600,000 compared to roughly $2.4 million, that's like 25% of your budget in reserves. If you're comparing to this year's annual budget, what assume it's a current reserve of $600,000. Is there any kind of standard for how much you should have in reserve for compared to your annual budget?
Well, I think Tom had
300%.
Yeah, 300%.
Oh, yeah, that's the limit.
That's the limit,
so
yeah.
Too, yeah.
Yeah, depending on the risks in your revenue and your expenses,
mm-hmm.
They estimate, as far as operating reserves, they estimate that it should be between 3 to 6 months of your operating budget. That's just for your operating reserve. We also have capital assets reserves, emergency reserves, areas. So each one of those has to be kind of analyzed individually. But operating reserves is the only one where they really give you a recommendation. And based on risks, they recommend that it be between 3 and 6 months of your operating budget. And 300% is the max.
Yeah, right.
Dave, let me go to you. What's your recommendation, if any, to a rate increase?
Right. I would say 3%. It's not a lot of money, but the reimbursement we could get, we have the funds to. I just think we don't need to raise rates to the shareholder. I think we should keep it to a minimum right now. The reserves, I mean, the even a 5% would, it's not going to affect reserve money, I don't think. That's not a lot of money. So I would say 3.
Just another comment that I'll make. If we go back to when we did I think it was a 4-year cash flow analysis, going back to that information, I think it was a 3.5% increase that was in that recommendation. Well, you know, a lot's changed since then, but just going back to that package that was presented back in March, I believe, in the cash flow, it was showing a 3.5% increase.
What's the pleasure of the board?
Put something on the table so we can...
Well, the table is the preliminary budget is offered with and the recommendation is a 3% fee increase.
And I would make that, I would move that, what you just said, adoption, that the board adopt that.
At 3% recommendation?
Correct.
Is there a second?
I'd second it just for discussion.
Okay.
Thank you.
Calling on the discussion. The motion is to accept the budget as presented with a 3% rate increase.
When would we, if we, assuming we would approve that, how do we inform the shareholders? Would that be done today at the meeting or by letter or?
We can do that and we'd put it on our website. We'd put it on all the normal areas that we use for advertising, if you will. And the average cost to the homeowner at 3% is about $18 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another way to put it.
In the past, if we've had rate increases, what's been the reaction of the shareholders in general?
Well, there were 2 years where there were no rate,
right.
7 and 8, there weren't any, and then the third year, or the 209, I think it was 10%. But that was about the same time the CCWD was cutting us off from water, and there were some other things that played into it. And I would just offer to you that 2 years of no rate increases taught us a lesson that we don't want to learn again. Okay, now that's my
opinion. And that 10% on 3 years is not much more than the 3%.
Well, thank you very much. And
it's not unprecedented.
So you eat the elephant with a small bite.
I'd rather, as a homeowner, you know, that the impact to go from 848 to 873 and for us add an extra buck for outdoor use, my God. Look at the grocery store. Look at the gas pump.
Well, I did look at the gas pump. It took them a dramatic drop.
It's going to be dropped.
There's a huge glut of crude oil. Okay, now that being said.
Sorry.
But yeah, it was $4 a week ago.
Jay, you raise a point. I think when we say 3%, you don't get much of a reaction at all. If we said something around 6 or 7, we would.
Yeah, I'm just gauging whether or not the board's willing to support that. I mean, would feel comfortable presenting that and
a 3% increase? Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Tom mentioned 3.5% as a recommendation from, who was that from, Tom?
That was in that cash flow analysis package that I presented last March.
Well, right now the recommendation is 3 and we haven't moved on it yet.
So that's a $23 a year increase or $25 a year increase. Depending if you have a meter or not.
$3 a month.
Yeah, so you know, the issue for me is not the 3% per se. I think you know, you're right. It's best to eat an elephant in small bites. But it's in the integrity of 2019 preliminary budget vis-a-vis the 2018 final. There's a huge swing in some of these numbers that I'm not at this point understanding of, you know, the reasons why. That you know could have a significant impact on the bottom line.
Well, can't we add the MC engineering costs into the expenses? So instead of having it under the USDA expenses, since we're actually going to have to pay it out of our pocket,
yes,
out of our bank account,
yes.
And I would suggest that the final 2018 number be higher than the fourth. 100,010 because we're already at 558,000 for the year, aren't we?
We're at 558.
Yeah. So I think we should. I suggest we move it up into some other expense category so it shows it.
Yeah, sure, it's a ballpark expense, yes.
Yeah, because that's a, we're going to probably pay them $500,000 next year.
What do we figure, well, I thought it was 800, that you said it was...
It might be 600, I don't, you know. So, I don't think we're going to pay them the 3.2 million we have on this list, but I would be really scared if we did.
Right. No, I think their contract-wise is a little over 6, like 618.
Right.
Joe.
Yeah, can I bring a comment? Is that, it looks like we kind of have a hidden reserve in a line item because we don't know. But I recommend that the line item be what we think it might be, and then put a reserve note, say if we got a little extra for that unknown risk. And so you can line item within the reserve if need be, but I would stake that money that we think we need, put it into reserve, at least what Sharon has been talking about also. Or put it into another item. But kind of have it hidden in there and try to remember why we did it or don't know why we did it. It's somebody to look at it. Why are you doing that?
Well, a 3% increase is not a huge amount of money. However,
I thought on the line item, though,
yes.
It's bumped up. The 3%, I agree with 100%.
Right.
But anything in the cost item, we haven't got identified, put it in the reserve as such, and if we can identify it in the reserve, fine, but not necessarily as, leave the numbers pure on each line out of what we think it is,
mm-hmm.
and then make a contingency thing on things we don't understand.
So here's an interesting question. So if you look at, under, again, expense summary, office wages, third line item down, shows $130,628 as the year-end final, but then there's no proposed increase for next year.
That's because the actual was only $117,000.
Yeah, so...
So it already includes a 10% increase from 2017.
That is with a 10%
increase, right.
So that will most likely come down.
Guaranteed. Any other questions or comments? Does everyone understand the motions before us? Mm-hmm. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. Matter carries. Thank you.
One abstention.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you for correcting me.
Andy said one abstention.
That's all right.
Abstain?
Yes, you can abstain.
Thank you. Okay, absolutely. I need a name for abstaining.
Andy.
Thank you.
Yeah. Abstentions by rule are identified.
That's fine.
Yeah, okay. No, I just...
I have no problem with...
I know that, but it's my conscience I'm talking about, not yours.
Okay, well, my house burns down next week because of your 3% increase. So
and you're cut off as water?
Yeah.
Yeah. Save the figs. All right, correspondence on new business, item A.
Actually, pardon me, the long-term water rate plans with Bateman, unfinished business, did we discuss that already?
I was having a moment there.
If we just finished the 2019 budget, B, under unfinished business, we did not discuss yet, I don't think.
No.
We just finished A, under unfinished, the 2019 budget.
Long-term water rate. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah. In fact, would you indulge me and let me go through a few things? We'll come back to that.
Okay.
Okay. Correspondence?
None.
Report on audit deficiencies. That's in the package.
Is there any questions on that?
Are there any questions? Get them to me. Board vacancy we'll discuss during the closed session, if that's agreeable with all. Rate consultant, that's a spin something out of last month's meeting where a recommendation was for us to look into reaching out to those that do reviews of rates and so on. I was talking to Sharon about this yesterday. and she has found somebody that would be willing to look at our the work that we're putting together for our rate structure, correct? Do I have that correct?
Well, I've asked them. I don't know if they haven't responded yet.
Okay.
So it's a group that does, it's the Environmental Finance Committee, and they get funded by EPA grants. And they provide support to small water companies, and they provide a lot of webinars, which I find them very useful. You know, so anyway, but they do a lot of pro bono work for small firms if you need help. And they, so I sent them an email and asked them if they would be willing to look at our rate study when we're done to just see if there's, or maybe we can talk with them.
What's the name?
I can send it to you.
Environmental compliance. Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Cal Mutuals might be another one that has.
So I think, you know, I know we discussed this yesterday briefly. I look more at this, all the information that Tom has been doing, and I feel like if we had a report that went along with his, all his usage study, that would pretty much could stand by itself.
Jeff
is here.
Jeff Graham.
You know, Tom is so thorough.
Ask him to come.
But I'm not sure.
He's in the back there.
Okay.
You know, if we went out to another firm to actually do a rate study, it would be a huge expense.
I think Tom's done a phenomenal job, because that is not an easy thing to get your head around, and he's done a great job at it. So if you have somebody like that that would just review and provide some feedback on it, that might be a much more cost-effective way to go. Because if you bring in Black & Veatch or, you know, somebody like that, it's going to be a significant cost.
Yeah.
Well, I think it also helps to have an unbiased third party, you know, kind of look over your shoulder to, if nothing else.
Well, we can get one for $75,000.
Yeah.
You know, I asked my old boss, who worked, has his own firm. I said, do you guys do this type of work? And he said, yes. But his response to me was, why would you pay us when you could do this yourself? So I was like, well, okay, that's one way of looking at it.
I agree with that. I think it's... it's good money, and it's to have a third party look at it. The question is, how much are we willing to pay for a third party?
Sure. Yeah. Well, if you've got this pro bono firm, I'm...
that has some attraction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Item E.
I sent out a agreement. Caltrans approached me to put up a radio antenna on tank 4. And we are currently going through the agreement. Our attorneys have some suggestions. It's on there.
There's nothing really controversial in there. I think you guys have all seen it, but it's a contract negotiation, so it's probably better for executive session. And we can handle it very quickly. It's still under negotiation, basically.
Right.
No, well, I just wonder why we have to be so greedy in our estimated what we ask for rent.
Do we talk about that now? Or?
I think we should just take it to executive session.
Okay. Yeah, no action of the board is necessary on this. But we're not going to be greedy. I'll give you that. Any more than they would be.
Is there a line item here called
red dog? Green avarice.
I don't see any
generosity. Yeah. Charity.
Is there any other new business come before the board? If you'd indulge me, I'd like to introduce Jeff Graham. Jeff, stand up where we can all see you. Jeff is with Mazingo, one of the principals of Mazingo.
No, I'm a senior project manager.
That's all right. That's close enough. And we thank you for coming out on your Saturday. Sorry to put you through this part. It'll make this afternoon a lot easier.
Yeah.
We don't know what type of a crowd we're going to assemble, but they'll all be customers of ours. And we're thankful the fact that we can put you up front to talk a little bit about what's going on. They've seen a lot.
Right.
The consensus of the homeowners, or some, is that they're very pleased with the work you're doing.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah, it's obviously it's a you know, somewhat difficult project whenever you're going to go in and do like a retrofit or do a new installation in a subdivision situation. So there's always the the two theories of construction would be, one is where you go in and you kind of blow the place up, but you're in and out quick. And that's one way to kind of, a theory on it. And the other way is to do it kind of long and tedious, but be very clean about it. So there's that kind of that magic fine line that you got to find. And I think the crews have, you know, started about a month ago. We've got about 5,000 feet of mainline in to date. I think it's gone really well. We've gone through a variety of types of equipment to find the right set of equipment to do the trenching and backfill. But so far, so good. We've loved the cooperation with your board so far. It's been fantastic. We think we're going to make a good project out of this. So anything we can do to help, we're here.
Excellent. And
how's it going with the Homeowners Association?
We haven't had any, that I know of, Dave. I don't think we've had any reports one way or the other. I don't think we've had any contact.
I have.
With our crews that I know of.
I've spoken to my counterpart. He'll be at the meeting this afternoon. Things are well.
Okay.
In terms of water,
yeah, there was a little pop up that occurred early on where the homeowners wanted to charge us rent to put our equipment on their property.
Yeah, there was a small section in the specifications that showed there was a possibility for us to use a portion of the parking lot down there by the lodge, but when we came on board and reached out to them to do so, there was no agreement that it would be amenable for us to use the property. So we've since then gone out and kind of canvassed the area. We've come up with a small location for the fire department, which we've reached an agreement with. So what that's forcing us to do, without having kind of a larger area as a laydown area, it's forcing us to kind of bring our materials in right along the trench side as we go each day, which impacts the roads a little bit more than we'd like to do. But it's just what we're given out here. There just isn't that much open space for us to utilize. And it's such a large geographic area as well. So. I don't know that any one particular location was going to suffice to make it to where we're not encumbering each street. So it's just a matter of, you know, handling the logistics of the materials coming in. Basically, you know, it's a small diameter pipe, so the pipe isn't much of an impact, but it is 100% import project. So all of the dirt that gets trenched out of the ditch gets hauled away, and 100% of a Class 2 base rock comes in. And gets imported in, so that's the main issue that we're finding right now.
Is there any increased cost incurred because of that?
Well, we had really hoped for that location. We thought that was a nice central location, so it has been an impact on us. But you know, I haven't really kind of, you know, sat down and thought of the cost impact of it. I mean, it just, you know, we just got into the project and just started working our way through. Okay, let's find a place to lay down. And
I think we should make the point to the HOA board that, to the extent we're incurring any additional costs because of that decision, it's costs that our shareholders are going to pay, which are their members.
Mm-hmm. And a big impact on the roads that they're imposing on their homeowners.
To the extent they can help facilitate this project, their cooperation, I think.
Well, we're getting that. I think we're getting that. It is my hope we're getting that. That's equivocating, I know, but I talked to my counterpart about it. The fact that they want to charge us or charge you, hence us, to put your equipment there is like calling a plumber at your house to fix your toilet and then charging them to park in your driveway.
We offered monthly rent, but then we also offered to do some upgrades. You know, we noticed it's a paved parking lot, so we could, you know, help them out with any
they forgot about
ceiling
that part.
Or additional paving or base rock or something like that. And, they don't seem to be amenable to anything they offer.
But if you feel comfortable today, would you mention the fact you are hiring? There, a lot of local people are working on this project, including local subs.
Oh, yeah, many. Well, many of our superintendent, I believe, is down in Avery. Four or five of the guys on the crew are all local people that live within probably a 15-mile radius of the project. So that was attractive to many of the guys in our company to come work on this particular project. So the crew we put together is actually a mishmash of other guys that all kind of live up here. That was the idea, to give them an opportunity to be close to home because they do travel so much with their regular job.
Okay, well, again, thanks for coming.
You guys are welcome.
Item next after we settle a matter with Caltrans, action item report, the 2019 meeting schedule. You received a handout on meeting schedule for 2019. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. It shows you meet January, March, May, June, September, August, November.
August is around there, but...
What was that again?
That was sort of an add-on.
Yeah, I know.
January, March, May, June, which is our annual, August, September, November. So it's the annual meeting plus six meetings a year.
Why back-to-back in August and September?
Doesn't have to be. It could be August, October. But it's trying to squeeze in at the end of the year. It could be anything that the board would like. This is just an idea. This assumes you want to continue to meet on the second Saturday of every month.
It's probably as good as anything.
Yeah, we can leave this open a little bit. We don't have to settle it today, but I want to settle it before the month is out. If you'd like to think about the current meeting schedule or propose a different one, please let me know. We'll let it go at that. So I want to move on.
Is there a preference for the current meeting schedule versus the tentative meeting schedule?
I think we would want a November meeting so we can get the budget done and not wait till December 14th. That's like the main thing I see.
Yeah, Jeff, it's really up to us. It's a comfort level type thing.
Yeah.
We don't have to meet every month, so we try and make it every other month. And we're required to meet in June. And we meet in May to prepare for June. We meet the latter part of the year to prepare the budget. Tentative meeting schedule is also listed here. How about if you devour it, analyze it, and let me know? And I'll consolidate
where was that document?
That was in your package.
Oh. Right before the action item.
I added the August one. Is that agreeable? You let me know on your preferences.
Do you want to know if people want to move to the first Saturday instead of
I've talked to the staff about it. What drives the second Saturday is waiting for the banks to notify us of matters of interest and so forth and so on. It's probably not egregious enough to drive what we're doing, and with all due respect to those that have to live with it. And so the first Saturday is an option. We don't go to the third Saturday because the homeowners had the vapors. They couldn't come to this meeting and go to their own. Nothing, they turned out. So if would you do two things for me? Settle up if you want to meet on the first Saturday or the second. What you feel would be a workable meeting schedule for 2019. I'll collect all your results and put them together, and we'll come up with a proposal.
I think what you've got there is fine.
In the second Saturday.
Which one?
The one that was on the document that...
9th, 11th.
This one or this one?
Oh, there's two.
There are two.
Different ones.
Mm. Oh.
12, 9th, 11th. No, just the bottom changes.
So we can move on, would you please notify, let me know. New action items?
I noted a couple. There was the Mutual Water Company, whether we're subject or not to the state mandated reduction of water usage. And Mutual was going to check on that. There was also something that Tom mentioned, and I'm sorry, I came in on the last part of it, that Bill and John were to meet in December with the LRPC, and I do not know what that's regarding.
It's for the additional projects.
Additional?
Projects that we, and they might want to consider doing.
Is that an actionable item?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Probably. Because okay, eventually it has to go to the board, you know, so.
Okay. On the action items that you have in your packet, several of them are complete. The town hall meeting, obviously, that's happening today. The lead and copper, we may be looking forward or looking for one more action on that. The reserve fund policy, Evans Pass Accounting has looked over the language. We've discussed that it's okay and it doesn't hurt our not-for-profit status to have a reserve fund. So both of those actually are complete now. The only thing that's still moving forward on this action item that was printed is the rate consultant, and Sharon's looking into that.
Okay.
And that's all I have.
Okay. Any other action items? Okay, we're going to go back to unfinished business item B.
There's information in the packet, which I'll get to in a little bit, but first of all, I'd like to hand out Joe. It occurred to me at some point that if we're going to, well, when we approve, there should be one of them for bond, when we approve the rate structure, whatever that structure is, if it's going to be effective in 2020, that we should have a calendar, the board should have a calendar of events that occur in the process of reviewing and adopting that rate structure. And so if you start backwards, which is the way I did it mentally, if the October meeting next year is the time when the board would make the final approval of the whatever that rate structure is and then distribute it to the membership, then there would be a meeting in August in which we would get feedback from shareholders, their discussions, revisions to rate structure, etc., have a tentative approval of a final rate structure, and distribute that final rate structure to shareholders. At the town hall meeting in June, working backwards again, we'd have a preliminary rate structure presented, explained, and discussed at the town hall meeting of shareholders. The shareholders would be given an opportunity to provide feedback, etc., etc., and information would then be provided to the August meeting at which the board would essentially adopt the final rate structure, but not put the final stamp on it. That would be in October. If we're going to do that in June, and if the board is going to present something to the shareholders in June, we'd have to do something in April to adopt whatever it is we're going to be presenting to the shareholders in June. And if we're going to do that, then we need the Long Range Planning Committee to present a completed draft rate structure for 2020 to the full board for discussion next February. I offer that as a suggested time frame. Since I will not be here, you, the board, will adopt whatever rate, whatever time frame calendar you select, but I just offer this as a suggestion for thought about that process.
Okay.
The same thing to a certain extent holds true for the other information that I have available that I provided in the packet about long-term rate considerations, and I will not go through this in detail. Basically, this doesn't mean anything unless there's someone on the board who believes that conservation is an important factor in our future rate structure. If you believe that conservation is important, then I think you come up with a rate structure that has a higher percentage that is variable. By that I mean not fixed. If you believe, and thus, and that you charge, that we charge from the first drop of water, i.e. getting rid of the 350-gallon allowance. I'm happy to answer any questions about that, but I just believe that the allowance does not promote conservation. These people to believe, like me, who come up here periodically, that I can use 350 gallons of water without any additional charge, and I can figure out how much that is, and I can water trees or do whatever else it is, I think I should be charged from the first drop.
It's 350 cubic feet.
300 cubic feet, okay.
Yeah, I'm not here to split hairs.
Okay, but 300 cubic
yeah.
feet.
That's 58 gallons a
per day.
Yeah.
And so I would just suggest that the board members read what's here, look at it. If it strikes a tone with any of you, I'm happy, you can feel free to call me. I'm happy to discuss it with you. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. I think economics is a driver of decision making. And if you provide me with a greater economic incentive, I will save or use less water. The other thing I would suggest that independent of all of this is that the board should develop and adopt a goal for total consumption in any calendar year. What is that goal? Doesn't really matter to me the lower the better, because that's, and if you get the Michael can do the calculation, I suppose, of what 55 gallons a day times number of people times the number, you can figure out what our usage should be. But if we do not have a goal, then how do we measure whether or not we are conserving or doing the right thing year to year to year? Right now we're measuring it against 2013 and saying, okay, we're at 40% lower than that or whatever. I don't know whether that's that is definitely a good thing, but is that where we could be? And is it where we should be? And again, I just offer that to the board as my sort of outgoing soliloquy, and I will now be quiet and not take any more of your time.
Bullshit.
Strike that from the record. Well, it sounds like conservation is going to be imposed upon us anyway from the state. It's,
yeah.
We can meet those goals first.
The state is what makes us look at 2013. That's where we're always, that's the bar. You know, you have to, that's where, so the state is going to mandate what we do.
Well, they don't make us look at 2013. That is generally the bar.
Right.
And when the drought mandates were in place, that was what the mandate, that's what the conservation mandates were measured against, was 2013. And so that's because it was before any conservation mandates were imposed. So that's generally what agencies look at as sort of a baseline.
I guess what I'm doing, we're going to get one shot at a substantial change in rate structure.
Well, I disagree with that. We can change it every year. The board has the ability to change the rate structure. If the first year it doesn't work out, then we go back and say, okay, we tried this. We didn't get enough revenue from a variable rate or from the fixed rate, and they can go back and change it to whatever they think they need to meet their revenue and any conservation goals they need to do. So it is not a one-time thing. This is just going to be something that is looked at every single year. So I disagree with the statement that we only have one chance. I just, my water company at home, every 2 years they send me a new rate structure. So it's not a one-time thing.
What I was trying to say was that, maybe I'll say it this way, the best chance at making a significant change Everybody now, other than those who have meters, is paying a fixed charge with no additional charge for their water. They're all paying the average rate. When you institute whatever rate we institute, there are going to be those whose bills are going to go up and those whose bills are going to go down. Mathematics. I'm suggesting that if we're going to take a significant step towards conservation, then you're going to make the variable component larger. It will be easier to do that the first time around and then ease up on it than it would be to start out with a relatively small variable component. You'll always raise the money. It's never going to be an economic issue. It's all going to be about consumption of water, and whether you call that conservation or not, it's all going to be about what the total amount of consumption is. And I would contend that the higher the variable, the larger the percentage of variable rate, the lower the consumption.
But you know, as a member of the Long Range Planning Committee, I think you know we need to move on. But I do want to say you know, I respect your point of view and you know, welcome that. And I think it's up to Sharon, myself, and Tom, and whoever else wants to be a part of that. You know, Joe. Yeah. You know, to take that under consideration. I think, you know, you make some valid points that we need to consider. I think we still have a long way to go and a lot of discussions that need to be had before we settle on any sort of a recommendation to come back to the board with, but your points are well taken.
You have to consider having served on long-range planning committees for East Bay MUD and Contra Costa Water District. When the conservation is working, when the 25% savings are reached, revenue goes down.
Yes.
And you still have to have the revenue to operate the infrastructure.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, rates have to be adjusted based on the conservation levels.
Right.
So I agree, it's not a one-time shot.
I think
shot.
We're going to be readjusting every year. And I think that fixed rate, you know, anyway, we'll discuss it. I mean, I agree. You have some really good points. You know, and we will take them into consideration with the long range.
If every house has a meter, it doesn't matter whether you come once a month or are there every day.
Right.
You pay that tiered rate, whatever that, however that rate
right.
is established, when you use the water.
Joe.
Yeah, and Sharon and I both have taken the course to see the webinars that we're talking about, and they kind of model that a little bit. You know, of course, the issue of consumption and whatnot is an issue, but there are other issues. And one of the things that we've talked about before is to stabilize the variability of the income of the company so you're not being jerked around as such. And so you've got to match that along with the consumption thing. I think the people, when the drought was going on, really pushed down purposely to lower the consumption. Of course, that didn't change our income at all. As it's crept up a little bit, it's been pretty stable. 17, that Tom was mentioning, 2017, 2018, almost with, you know, you can superimpose as such, it's kind of a normal thing. My recommendation that we also factor that usage in. And the stability of our income in addition to the conservation concept. And the conservation concepts can also be moved with the publicity as such, showing where we are and how we're doing, so the person not only gets personal feedback, but we get the aggregate feedback as such. So there's lots of dimensions to that, not really just the one focus.
Well, long range, well, either you completed your work enough where we can present the new rate structure at the annual meeting?
No. No way.
I would think we'd present it in November.
Didn't want to think about that for a second.
No, because I think, I don't, you know, I think we have to be much closer to a point when all the meters go active.
Fair. All right.
Yeah, we can limp along on the system that we've got now, as unfair as some people may perceive it being, with, you know, particularly with part-timers. But, you know, the current system ain't broke, and I think that the more data that we have and the more accurate data that we have that we can point to when we get up in front of our shareholders with whatever the new structure is, the greater our credibility.
Agreed.
And I think a sample size of 800 meters at the moment is too small to do that with.
Well, even though the project calls for complete installation by January of 2020, the fact is we're allowing the homeowner a five-month hiatus before they have to hook up, correct?
6 months, yeah.
Six
so they
months?
Won't really be until 20... We won't have everybody online until 2021.
Right.
Okay.
Everybody.
That, then we'll be prepared then.
Right.
All right.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to...
Can I just offer
sure.
one thing? I've said this before, but you know, we're not subject to Prop 218. But generally speaking, it is expected that mutuals will adhere to that principle of the water rate being tied to the cost of delivery for each customer. And a rate that is the larger portion of the rate that's based on consumption, the harder it is to justify that. Because for us,
granted,
water is extremely cheap, infrastructure is what is expensive.
Yes.
And the other factor there is the higher percentage of the rate that's consumptive, you know, your the people who use more water here, which isn't necessarily because they're wasting, it's just because they spend more days per year here, those are the ones that are going to end up paying far more than the other ratepayers for the same service, even though they're using more water, and we're providing the exact same service to those different customers. So you might get some pushback from that perspective. Another way to think about it is to do something along the lines, and this is for the Long Range Planning Committee to consider, is what CCWD just did, and we don't have to by any means follow their lead, but they no longer include any water in the base rate, which is what it's kind of similar to what you're mentioning. They don't, you don't get any water included in a base rate anymore with CCWD. You pay a base rate, and then everything you use above that is additional consumptive charge at a much lower consumptive rate than it was before, but your base rate is just your cost of your right to receive water from them, and then you pay for everything above that.
Well, echoing something Joe said a minute ago, our caution is to learn from the water companies in Southern California, especially, that enacted a drought fee trying to recover their financial loss because their consumptive rates were so low.
Right.
And the court says, no, no, no. Now, granted, that doesn't apply to us,
well,
but I don't want to have to learn the experience that it might.
The court says no unless you can demonstrate that it's tied to the cost of delivery.
And or you
can't do it as a penalty to incentivize.
Well, they considered you have to go to the vote of the people. It was a 218 issue as well.
Mm-hmm. Those are tricky issues, and that's a big part of the reason why CCWD just overhauled their rate structure in that way, but they also do have a drought charge that they can impose.
Okay. I'm going to conclude this. We have to. We're up again. Going to be up against it time wise. Lee, thank you for everything you've done for us.
Definitely.
Yeah. Thank you.
I treated Lee to an extravagant meal yesterday, and that's going to be the payoff, I'm afraid.
It wasn't extravagant, thank you.
Yeah. We're going to adjourn to executive session, so I thank you all for coming. Jeff Graham, especially for taking time out of your Saturday and for what you're about to do.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Jeff, do you know where to meet?
The food is here. You want to grab lunch, and we'll start discussing some... executive session matters.
All right, Tom.
I'm going to sign off.
All right, Tom. Thank you.
Good luck at the town hall meeting.
Thanks, Tom.
We're going to talk about you there.
Oh, yeah.
My ears are ringing.
Tom, while I have your ear, can you settle on a date for our next meeting sooner rather than later so I'm able to block it on the calendar?
Lou.
Okay. Thank you.
Why don't you grab somebody and then we'll start.
What are the Caltrans agreement? What was the other one?
Dave, how do you turn this on?
Oh, yeah, I got it.
Oh, I think I got it. This is
high tech stuff.
Not trip on the wire.
So we said we're going to be in advance anticipating that in my example there's a 30%.
Well,
because of the and no matter what you do,
I want to hang out here for a little bit.
It's never going to be 5. It's going to be
Have you been traveling much?
Actually, no.
How's your wife? May I ask? Or should I not ask?
No. She's doing really, really well.
That's good. That's really good.
She had a double mastectomy in July.
Mm-hmm.
And the recovery was nothing short of amazing.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. And then she's going through radiation treatment now. Because they did find some less than 200 cancer cells had migrated to a lymph node.
Okay.
So they ended up taking 5 lymph nodes, including the one that was contaminated. The surgeon in the cancer center at Stanford recommended that she go through radiation therapy. So she's she was scheduled for 33 days. And she's got, after yesterday, 8 days left.
That's right.
So she's going to knock up with
it.
The oncologist says that she's in complete remission. But, we all know what that means.
Right, right. Yeah.
So, it's... Her spirits are great. Chemo was completely debilitating. I mean, it just absolutely almost killed her. In fact, I had 911 on the line a couple of times.
I remember you saying
so I took a hiatus from work because of that, and getting back on as a consultant. Once you give up business, it's hard to get it back. So we're in the process of, we've got a couple of major proposals out currently. I've actually kind of started to enjoy semi retirement.
So there you go. That'll force it. So.
Tuna, Andy?
Yep.
One of my favorites. A lot of mercury, though.
It is one of mine, too, but my wife cannot stand. Tuna.
Oh.
We don't ever get it at home.
My in-laws were headed up, and were lost.
They lost?
They got lost.
Oh my God. Where are they coming from?
Moraga.
No. One way to get here.
Have they not been here before?
Yeah, but they, he's 88 now.
Oh.
He missed the turnoff on 4 to get the Antioch Bridge and ended up four dead ends.
He ended up at what's left of paradise.
Says they're here.
How many
blues?
They're
here. Yeah.
You hate pickles?
I hate pickles.
Lay them on me.
Yeah, I think they've ruined everything. Where's your pickle?
A pickle?
Yeah. I don't think they should be on
here. Oh, I think it's...
No, they were,
well, there's a cucumber.
I like cucumbers. I just don't like pickles because they kind of...
Okay.
No, actually, it keeps on going.
I mean, depending if you're heading south or east, and then you make a left.
Yeah.
On 3.
Yep.
And then it winds up going out into the delta.
There it is.
But if you miss that turn,
well,
you keep going, then you're on Vasco, and then you wind up in Livermore.
Yeah, there was a letter.
There was? Correspondence?
It was from Lee Schmitz, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Michael?
Yes, sir.
Why couldn't my defense be? We're charging you more than that. This is a partnership. This is a shared, you know, close group. And third, we don't charge you more because we don't make any money. I mean, it's a, well, we just have to have zero base budget. Mm-hmm. So clearly, we're not charging more than what it costs to run the group.
The legal question comes down to.
I can't find it.
And again, we're not subject.
I know it's here somewhere.
What are you looking for?
Lee wrote a letter about Carissa.
You might want to print it.
Mutual should adhere to
these guys have it?
I have it.
Cost of delivery, but it's not just in the aggregate.
No.
It's so you,
I have it
the
somewhere.
The reason these Prop 218 cases come up is because it's the taxpayer groups that will find
I can't get it.
Instances where water agencies are charging
can't get it.
Higher.
I'm having trouble downloading.
You know, more money to certain ratepayers than to other ratepayers, and that's what they target. Those ratepayers sue.
So if I wanted to use Wi-Fi, what?
I'm paying more than my share.
Do I use BLSMWC?
So it's not an aggregate
password. Yes.
Good question. I always forget.
I use the 5G one.
I see it. Okay.
And then it's Mutual WC.
That's it.
Is the password. Actually, mine just says BLS and WC. I'm on
Mutual WC.
But we charge
every password?
No, Mutual WC is a password.
In the following year, we rebate.
I'm just trying to.
To everybody. We rebate whatever profit we make to back to everybody. But the difference is.
But I'm having trouble downloading anything.
That's even good. I just popped right up this.
I had no problems for now.
Basically 15%.
It's like they went to the router office or they kicked me out.
That 15% is going to be.
Maybe now that Jay's on it.
Let's see. I'm going to try right now and see if I'm wrong.
I mean, you may price those people out of living. The water rate for them is up. The water rate for them would be, if it's just based on consumption, you're going to have people that don't come up here at all. Maybe they come up here for a week out of a year. And they're if the water rate was a huge, if it's been
well,
pushed on the water rate.
50, 60,
40. I'm on BLSMWC.
Honestly, if it were me making
the decision, I can't, it's just like,
it would be,
it can't do anything.
It's us.
So in other words,
yeah.
Thing is different.
But they're having problems downloading stuff for them. I don't.
No. Wait, I was on
there. I was on, and I was fine.
If you only use them 5% of your cost.
Yeah, that would.
It's not just metering.
The internet up here has been working very well the last 2 days.
Tracking consumption, there's all sorts of
things. I don't know why.
And
here at the water company or in general in the area?
AT&T. Well, but then again, we don't.
I have Comcast
for
everything at home.
That
works any better.
Identifying where the water goes.
Do you find any difference between AT&T and Comcast?
There is some portion of it that's tied to consumption. But for us,
I haven't tried any. We had AT&T for the longest time before we moved up full time.
Yeah,
but I got the bundled TV, telephone, and internet.
Okay. I just wish AT&T had pulled the fiber optics up here. So we could have you first.
I get everything I need out of Comcast with no problem at all. But I have better
what?
Highest speed access to it.
Well, it's your lifeblood, for God's sake.
Yeah. 10%.
Okay.
So, at some point there is a consumption.
Yeah, we do a fair amount of video conferencing.
Oh, okay.
And
well, your clients are everywhere, you'd have to.
If you use,
that's what I'm suggesting.
Right, but if you could do that,
what you ought to do is hire me as your law enforcement or your law and justice consultant.
Yeah, there we go.
You know,
sure.
That 5% is.
I giggle at some of the professionals I see on television doing it.
And then you
Wonder how they ever found their way to work. And the love of the FBI agent. You know, they're always retired FBI guys.
Anything more than 55.
Who I loved working with, but
is
they're not cops.
At a very high rate.
And why can't I make that rate?
Well, when I worked at Schwab's,
generate 50% of my revenue.
My office was directly
next door to Schwab's. A very small number of homeowners for the cost.
But at the time, Schwab was the 14th wealthiest person in the U.S.
Disproportionately large.
So he had bodyguards going with him, you know, wherever he went.
That's not disproportionate.
Corporate office in the city. And we put in a man trap plus a reception area that was a secure reception area that was staffed with ex FBI guys.
So it's perfectly set
for. Well, they do that. They're very good at it. Executive protection. And,
yeah, they were.
Regardless of how much
anyone can go to meet
they were in business.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Secret Service is a little deeper into it.
Right.
Blackwater.
Blackwater.
Oh, those guys.
They took a lot of flack, didn't they? Are they still in business?
Oh, yeah.
A friend of mine started a business like that 10 years ago. Sold it after 7 years. There were six principals in the business. First, they started guarding nuclear facilities. Then they got jobs in Iraq and personal protection. And sold the business, I forget the number of years. Had it for 8 years or 9 years. Each guy walked away with $155 million. Each one of the six.
That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to
get a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
How much are you paying?
As if you can quantify the cost of delivering a quantity.
If you'd allow me, it's a little after noon, or after 12 o'clock, and we're going to be meeting at 1, so. We're at a point where we want to discuss employee salaries and benefits. And Andy had made some recommendations. We touched on them lightly at last month's meeting that all the employees would get a 3% across the board pay, salary increase with the exception of Lee Schmeads, who would receive a 5% increase. And there's a last-minute request. Did you get it? About
Carissa?
An email.
Yeah. Did everyone get a copy of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Copy of it. It was an email.
It was an email from Lee Schmeads.
For Amber?
Well, she had
Carissa.
Is it in the packet, I think?
It wasn't in the packet.
Oh,
yeah, it's in the packet.
Email, confidential.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have it here.
Okay, why don't you go ahead? I'm sure I've got it.
Yeah, so it's dear members of the board, I'd like to petition you for a higher salary increase for Carissa Schlatt. She not only handles her job as accounts manager and all receptionist duty, but she goes above and beyond the scope of work she was hired to do. She is intelligent, well-spoken, and friendly, as I'm sure you'll all have witnessed at the meetings.